Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
First May edition of Radio Free America on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Duke Brooks here. Welcome aboard. Very glad that you could make it. The number is 718-305-7176. And hello to you, Lady Michelle. I see you in the chat room there. Very glad that you could join us. The chat room, of course, is open for business. Now then, today is the we're going to talk about a bunch of things. There is breaking news out of Washington. Why don't we go ahead and get to this first? This is from Fox News Politics. The House of Representatives voted today to hold former IRS official Lois Lerner in contempt of Congress for refusing to testify about the agency's targeting of conservative groups. The House voted 231 to 187. For a resolution holding Lerner in contempt. All the Republicans voted yes, along with six Democrats. Very interesting that the Democrats would also vote in favor of holding the woman who took it upon herself to protect their guy, the president's political party. I digress. Lerner's case will now be sent to the Justice Department, which then must decide whether to essentially prosecute Lerner in the case. Minutes after the Lerner vote, the House passed a resolution asking the Department of Justice to appoint a special counsel to probe the IRS by a vote of 250 to 168. House Speaker John Boehner issued a statement following the vote saying, quote, "It's time for Lois Lerner to account for her actions, and if she won't, then the full force of the law should be brought to bear." On the Democrat side, Representative Elijah Cummings of Maryland accused House Republicans of taking, quote, "a significant step backwards in their duty to uphold the U.S. Constitution by voting to strip an American citizen of her Fifth Amendment rights," unquote. House GOP leaders have said Lerner's testimony is important to fully investigate the scandal in which IRS agents singled out Tea Party nonprofit applications for extra scrutiny. Quote, "Thorough investigations by the Oversight and Government Reform Committee as well as the Ways and Means Committee have revealed findings that indicate that Ms. Lerner played a central role in the illegal targeting of conservative groups by the IRS," said House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, the Virginia Republican, in a memo last month. Last May, Lerner refused to answer questions at a hearing about IRS agents singling out Tea Party applications. She again refused to answer questions in March, citing her Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. The House Oversight Committee voted to hold Lerner in contempt last month. All Republicans voted in favor and all Democrats voted against. Following today's vote, the matter now goes to Ronald Manchin, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia. Federal law says Manchin or Mackin, M-A-C-H-E-N, has a, quote, duty to bring the matter before a grand jury, but a report by the nonpartisan Congressional Research Service said it was unclear whether the duty is mandatory or discretionary. Manchin was appointed to his job by President Obama. Quote, "We will carefully review the report from the Speaker of the House and take whatever action is appropriate," unquote, Manchin's office said in a statement. Lerner directed the IRS division that processes applications for tax-exempt status. She retired from the IRS last fall, ending a 34-year career in the federal government, including work in the Justice Department and Federal Election Commission. Well, there you have it. You know, a U.S. attorney that was appointed by Obama, he isn't going to do anything about it. And I, you know, as the way I read the Constitution, the Congress can override everything. The Congress can override the president if they have enough votes. The Congress, if they have enough votes, may remove issues at law from the purview of the court system. They can take an issue away from the Supreme Court if they want to. And I think, you know, Elijah Cummings is a Democrat from Baltimore. He represents what is known as a safe district, although if you have ever driven through the districts in the city of Baltimore that he represents, you will agree they are anything but safe. I used to live in Baltimore, trust me. If you live in Baltimore, you are going to be victimized. It's, you know, there's no question. You are going to be victimized either by the local felons or by the city of Baltimore's felonious government, that they just want your money. Couldn't care less about anything. They just want your money. But I digress. In any event, he is very he is all up in high dudgeon over the fact that they are telling Lois Lerner, you have to testify. The reason they're doing that, by the way, is that, yes, there is, in the Fifth Amendment, there is a right against self-incrimination. In the federal court system, as I understand it, and I'm not a lawyer and I don't even play one on the radio, but if you give any more information other than your name, or where you live, or your age, or something like that, then you have been considered to have waived your own Fifth Amendment privilege, Fifth Amendment right, rather. I think that's the way it works. I think that the way it has been interpreted is it's all or nothing. If you are put on the stand and the prosecution can't call you, if you are the, you know, if you're the defendant in a criminal case, the prosecution cannot call you. They can't force you to give testimony. You can give it yourself if you want. If your lawyer puts you on the stand, you can give testimony. But if your lawyer puts you on the stand, I think you have to give testimony. It's complicated. You know, the courts have interpreted all kinds of things in and out of the Constitution. It seems very clear that there are some people that are federal judges and U.S. justices and things who don't know what certain words mean in the English language. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable. Anyway, 718-305-7176 is the number. Several things to talk about tonight. Today is the 72nd anniversary of a very, very important and crucial battle in the Southwest Pacific during World War II called the Battle of the Coral Sea. You will remember last year I spoke with John Parshall about the Battle of Midway, and the Battle of Midway was a decisive, incredible victory by the United States over the Japanese. The Battle of the Coral Sea kind of set up our victory a month later at Midway. So, you know, every single college professor, history department geek, faculty lounge, you know, historian, people right now are having final exams, are all on, you know, getting final exams ready and grading them and that sort of thing. And that's why none of those guys could be on the air with me tonight. So I'm kind of bumming, but I have done a little bit of reading about the Battle of the Coral Sea, and I think I can carry it. A guy named Tom Cleaver, who has just published a book about a USS Lexington fighter squadron, I did send him a note on Facebook, but he misinterpreted it. He thought the show was last night. I hope that Tom gets the message and everything, and that he actually calls in tonight. But, you know, a lot of it, one thing I've noticed in this life is that if you really depend on other people, generally speaking, you're going to be disappointed. 718-305-7176 is the number. I think we're also tonight, you know, in addition, we will touch on the Lois Lerner situation again briefly during the show. Ed Troy is going to be joining us a little over an hour from now. Ed is basically a lifelong, very good friend of mine. He lives in Colorado. He calls himself the Liberal Gladiator, or is it the Liberal Warrior, or the Liberal Avenger, or whatever. Ed is not nuts or anything, but I do think that liberalism is a psychiatric disorder, but I digress. I'm sure that you all know who Condoleezza Rice is. Professor Dr. Condoleezza Rice is now the provost or the chancellor at Stanford University, one of the Ivy League schools, the only one that is in California. And as you are aware, Rutgers University, which is the State University of New Jersey, had asked her to come and speak at their commencement. A couple of left-wing professors there and a bunch of left-wing students. I saw one of them on Fox News day before yesterday. She was a Mohammedan, and not an American, but she was complaining about Condoleezza Rice. And there were people that were having protests, and essentially they shouted her out, and they prevented her from. She decided to withdraw her speaking engagement at their commencement, which I think is one of the most ridiculous and absurd things that I, you know, unbelievable, just absurd. And, of course, now we have what I think most people would agree is the smoking gun memo in Benghazi. We'll talk about this. Apparently, the information that the White House, the emails that the White House sent to Judicial Watch, which is the organization in D.C., it's not part of the government, private group, Judicial Watch sent as a Freedom of Information request, and the emails that they sent to the Congress versus the ones that they sent to Judicial Watch are different. They are different emails. And now that House Speaker John Boehner, and frankly, I'm no big fan of John Boehner. I think he's has been a better House Speaker than Nancy Pelosi, but I'm no fan of his, has appointed South Carolina Congressman Trey Gowdy to be the chair of the House Select Committee. We'll talk about all these things. You know, we, our company, conservativenationmedia.com, is growing. I think everybody is aware of that. And we decided, since we are growing, to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher, who is a great guy, brings his engineer's insight and his love of the U.S. to American by Design Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central on conservativenationmedia.com. So stay with us all week long, since we're making some big changes and we are just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. And it is now just almost 15 minutes after the hour on the first May program of 2014 of Radio Free America, where the number is 718-305-7176. I was informed earlier tonight that the director of the CIA, John Brennan, is a convert to Mohammedanism. That just doesn't make an awful lot of sense to me. I mean, that seems to me to be directly analogous to putting, Heinrich Strasse in charge of the Office of Strategic Services during war. You're going to put somebody that's you know, is a representative of the enemy in charge of your intelligence gathering organization. That just doesn't work for me. But it does work for Obama, apparently. In any event, we are going to take a brief break now. Your calls and the Battle of the Coral Sea upon our return, so don't go away.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811, pcsforautomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
One goat can make the difference between nourishment and hunger. One goat can make the difference between poverty and sustained income. In the war-torn areas of southern Sudan, one goat can make the difference between life and death. Find out how you can help. Visit goatsfortheoldgoat.org. That's goats, F-O-R, theoldgoat.org. Fighting hunger, one goat at a time.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism radio show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism radio show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Monday, Monday, so good to me.
I know, it's not even Monday.
I hoped it would be.
It is, in fact, Wednesday. Welcome back to Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Duke Brooks here. 718-305-7176 is the number. For the first 4 months of World War II, arguably the first 6 months of World War II, the United States was losing the war. I mean, there is no question about it. We were losing World War II. The first engagement with the enemy in World War II for us was a loser. We lost what the British call the Battle of Pearl Harbor and what we call simply Pearl Harbor. We lost that one. No question about it. The next battles that we lost were the Battle of Wake Island, which is the only time, I think, in the history of the U.S. Marine Corps that the Marines surrendered. I'm pretty sure it's the only time in U.S. Marine Corps history that they surrendered. If I remember reading John Wukovitz's book, Pacific Alamo, the story of Wake Island, they were ordered to surrender, I think, by FDR, ultimately, I think. Don't remember exactly, but we lost at Wake Island. We lost the Philippines. Why MacArthur kept his command is beyond me. I just don't understand how that could have happened, but it did. He kept his command after a ridiculous I mean, a day and a half after Pearl Harbor, the Japanese show up over Clark Air Base at in the Philippines near Manila, and all of MacArthur's airplanes were on the ground, and they all got wiped out. I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it. We were losing everywhere in the Pacific. We were on the defensive. We couldn't really do anything about it. We didn't have the men. We didn't have the materiel. We had had sort of a pacifist slash isolationist faction in the Congress that whenever the idea of, keeping our military strong was brought up, those guys would basically say, oh, no, we don't have to do that. We don't have anything to worry about here. Obviously, you know, if you are a superpower, we were not, I don't know if we were really considered to be a superpower back then, but I think if someone, and some people did certainly, if someone had looked at the world strategically, they certainly would have come to the conclusion that the United States was the world's only real potential superpower, and we certainly were. But if you are going to be a superpower, you had better act like one, or you're not going to be one for much longer. But I digress. In any event, after Pearl Harbor and the loss of Wake Island, American aircraft carriers, there were only three of them operating in the Pacific, the Hornet, the Enterprise, well, we had the Lexington, we had the York, so there were four. That were operational anyway, in the Pacific, and they basically just went on quite a few hit-and-run raids against Japanese island positions during the first two or three months of 1942. That was really about all we could do. In April of 1942, a brilliant and daring raid was launched against Japan. 16 B-25 bombers took off of the aircraft carrier Hornet, and they bombed Tokyo, Yokohama, Osaka, Kobe. They bombed Japanese cities, immortalized in the book 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, and the movie of the same name came out during the war. Did virtually no meaningful damage to Japan's war industry, but it sent a message to the Japanese and to the American people that we are going to fight Japan, and it sent a message to the Japanese that you are not invulnerable, you are not invincible, and we are going to take the war directly to you. This was just a foreshadowing of the things to come. In early May of 1942, now you have to try to picture in your mind the Pacific Ocean. Imagine Australia, okay? Australia sort of looks like a large kidney bean with a kind of land spike in the upper right hand, you know, the northeastern corner of it that kind of points north. Australia is the only nation in the world that occupies 100% of a continent, Oceania. Is the continent on which Australia is located, and they have a whole thing. It kind of looks like a giant island, but I guess when you think about it, all the continents kind of look like giant islands. They're all surrounded by water. But the Japanese wanted to invade, and to the northeast of Australia is an island called New Guinea. It's fairly large. And to the east of New Guinea, there is a chain of islands called the Solomon Islands, and one of those islands is called Guadalcanal. We'll talk about that later on. In early May of 1942, the Japanese wanted to attack and invade northeastern Australia and New Guinea, and the town, the city, the port in New Guinea that was their target is called Port Moresby. What they wanted to do is they wanted to take and hold that to prevent British forces I'm getting any kind of a, you know, a toehold, a bridgehead, whatever you want to call it, there in the Southwest Pacific. The United States was able to basically break their code, and we had been doing that for quite a while. And it's a good thing that we had. We had a fairly good idea of the Japanese code. The region of Australia that they wanted is the northeastern portion, very northeastern portion of Australia, where the town of Kimberley is located, and Cooktown, Normanton, Townsville. That I don't know. This is part of Queensland in Australia, and due north of Queensland, and north of the Gulf of Carpentaria, north of Cape York, which is that kind of finger pointing due north, is the island of New Guinea. Port Moresby is located on the southeastern side, and due east of New Guinea is New Britain, and due east of there are the Solomon Islands, including places like Tulagi, Bougainville, Florida, and the aforementioned Guadalcanal. We were aware that what the Japanese wanted to do is they wanted to take southern New Guinea, and they wanted to take Guadalcanal. Hey, sorry about that. And we sent our aircraft carriers, the ones that we had, we sent them to try to stop the Japanese from doing this. This was a strategic thrust on the part of Japan, and what we wanted to do was stop them. We had the Lexington, we had the Yorktown, and we had the Enterprise. I believe we did. The Battle of the Coral Sea is very, very complicated. And it's not, you know, Midway is fairly complicated, but the Battle of the Coral Sea is not nearly as easy to understand as Midway is. These naval battles in history prior to this one, the opposing fleets, the opposing ships would be inside of each other, and they would pound at each other with their massive naval artillery. That's how naval battles had been fought up until May 7th, 1942. On that day, the Battle of the Coral Sea was underway. It had been underway since May 4th, although the ships, they were in combat. The 6th to the 8th of May were the key days. There had been some bad weather earlier during this engagement. And American carrier planes were out to spot Japanese carrier planes and vice versa. And the two fleets never saw each other. And as a result, no battle like this in history had ever been fought. And this is why I've mentioned to it, you know, I called a couple of people, as I mentioned, to try to get a good guest, an informed guest on the show tonight, but they're all grading papers or administering exams or something like that. So, you know, we have no idea. Excuse me. But in any event, basically, a battle like this had never been fought before, which is why I think pretty much nobody really knew what they were doing. Never before had two massive naval fleets fought each other, and they never came into contact with each other. It was the first carrier versus carrier battle in history, certainly not the last. We had several of them in World War II. Whether we ever have any more, who knows? But I digress. The Americans struck the first blow. The U.S. Navy struck the first blow. And on the first day, which I believe was the 6th, we were able to sink a Japanese aircraft carrier called the Shoho. This was a small carrier. The Japanese had, they brought four carriers with them, I believe. The Shokaku, the Zuikaku, and the Shoho, and I think the Akagi. Let's see here. I think I can actually, they had a total of three carriers, two heavy carriers and one light carrier. The United States had two heavy carriers, nine cruisers, 13 destroyers, 128 carrier airplanes. The Japanese had 127 carrier airplanes. And we lost the USS Lexington, which was not, you know, we really could not afford to lose the Lexington. Japanese torpedoes were the most effective of World War II. No question about it. They were able to sink, if all American aircraft carriers in World War II that were sunk, that were hit by Japanese torpedoes, sank every single one of them. Our torpedoes, on the other hand, were not effective at all until probably about 1944. They just were not, just really were not that good. I am going to take a break now, and we're going to come back to the Battle of Midway very, very soon. Now, just when you think you have heard everything, those guys in D.C. come up with something else. They're going to keep on doing it until we, the people, run them out of town on a rail. But what about in the meantime? What are you going to do to protect your family, your property, and your sacred rights as an American when the left-wingers try to redistribute food and who knows what else in the name of social justice? Don't wait for the left to turn your world upside down. Get ready now. Make sure you can provide for your family in an emergency by going to the Patriot Depot, which is America's best-known warehouse for all your patriotic gear and survival needs. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. There you will find everything from the emergency food supplies to the patriotic gear that you'll need today and in the future. That's Patriot Depot at conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. A quick break now, coming back with more on the Battle of the Coral Sea and your calls, so don't go away.
You're struggling with your mortgage. You think about it. You don't do anything but think about it.
What are we going to do if we lose the house? Where are we going to go?
At work.
I can't let anybody find out. I'm so embarrassed.
At dinner.
How can I tell the kids? It's going to wreck their lives.
And at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get through this. What's going to happen to us?
It's time to stop thinking. It's time to start dialing. Call 1-888-995-HOPE for a free government program that offers expert one-on-one advice about your mortgage options.
I'm all alone.
No, you're not. We've helped over a million homeowners, and we want to help you. And now there are more ways to help. Call 1-888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Molon LeBay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeVay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
Want to help those affected by Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines? To donate, visit philippinesrelief.adcouncil.org. That's philippinesrelief.adcouncil.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change? You're listening to Duke Brooks on ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Sports fans, welcome back. Glad you could be along. 718-305-7176 is the number. We have been talking a little bit, you and I, about the Battle of the Coral Sea, which took place May 6th through 8th of 1942. The Coral Sea is the region of the Southwest Pacific that is east of Australia, kind of northeast of Australia, and southwest of the Solomon Islands. And the Solomon Islands were coveted by the Japanese. They were not really garrisoned at the time, although I think that there were some Australian forces present there. But the Japanese were able to make some virtually unopposed landings on Tulagi, a famous island battle in World War II. But their forces were surprised. American carrier planes. And when they saw the kinds of airplanes that were attacking them, they realized that, there must be American carriers here. And that's when the Japanese admiral Inoue, maybe related to the late Hawaii Senator Daniel Inoue, I know that guy was a war hero in World War II, no question about it, but I just never thought he was particularly patriotic. He didn't like this country. He should have left after the war. I don't know. But they sent the Japanese sent their aircraft carriers into the Coral Sea looking for the Americans. And over the next 2 days, this huge, wide-ranging carrier airplane fight took place. The U.S. Sank the Japanese carrier Shoho and also very heavily damaged the Japanese aircraft carrier Shokaku, the sister ship of the Zuikaku. Both of those carriers had attacked Pearl Harbor. There were six carriers that attacked Pearl Harbor, and the Americans wanted to get all six of them, no question about that. So they finally attacked. They were able to attack the USS Lexington, I think the next day, and they set some very serious fires in the Lexington, but we were able to get that aircraft carrier pretty much, at least the fires put out. But then someone had made a damage control error, and a gasoline fire sprung up inside the aircraft carrier, and they had to abandon it, and they had to scuttle the USS Lexington. So we lost the Lexington about less than 5 months after Pearl Harbor. Not good, not good. And at that point, we were down to just the Hornet, the Enterprise, and the Yorktown operating in the Pacific. And the Yorktown had gotten very, very heavily damaged during the Battle of the Coral Sea. And it had to essentially limp back to Pearl Harbor, where it underwent very, very rapid repairs and was able to rejoin the fleet and beat the Japanese at the Battle of Midway, which was on June 4th, 1942. But we did lose the Yorktown at the Battle of Midway. But in any event, the interesting thing about the Battle of the Coral Sea, and I promise, boys and girls, this time next year I'm going to know more about it than I do now. The interesting thing is, in addition to the fact that this was the first naval battle in history in which the opposing fleets never came into contact with each other, it was fought entirely by aircraft carrier aircraft. This was the first time in World War II that a Japanese strategic thrust had been stopped. They had never been stopped before. And during World War II, a lot of people really feared the Japanese, and one of the main reasons that they did is that in 1941, Japan had the world's most advanced and powerful naval air capabilities. They had the most advanced aircraft carriers in the world. They had the most advanced aircraft carrier planes in the world. They had the best torpedoes. They had a lot of pilots that were highly experienced, because keep in mind, Japan had invaded China in 1934, and they had been at war with China for 8 years at this point. You know, the rape of Nanking and all. That's really the reason why Japan attacked America, because Japan was attacking China, which at that time was pretty much an American ally. And we didn't want Japan to attack China. We didn't think that that was a good idea. They were pretty much our friends, and we didn't like people beating up on our friends. So what we told the Japanese was, we're not going to sell you any more oil, and we're not going to sell you any more steel. And the Japanese did not like that. And beyond that, President Roosevelt had moved the U.S. Pacific Fleet from San Diego, which is where it was based, to Pearl Harbor. And the Japanese viewed that as being, of course, the Japanese thought that everything America did was an act of war back then. We were building the Alcan Highway from our own country on our own continent through Canada up to Alaska during peacetime. The Japanese called that an act of war. Benny Goodman releases a new record, and the Japanese call it an act of war. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, no matter what we did, Japan had a real serious problem with it, or at least they thought that they did. And that's the reason why we pretty much wound up at war with them. They thought that we were going to attack them using the our Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor. If Japan had decided to roll into what is today called Malaysia, but back then was called Malay, the Kra Peninsula, Borneo, and in places like that, they could get all the oil and all the rubber they needed. And if an army has all the tires and all the gasoline that it could possibly ever use, it's almost invincible. And that's the reason why they attacked us at Pearl Harbor. Incidentally, were you aware that conservative nation media is now fully optimized for smartphones like the Android and the iPhone? So you can download our podcasts or listen to us live wherever you are and whenever you want to. The same great shows, same great people, now fully optimized for your smartphone. ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Look, I know this for a fact. I have actually tested this on my own smartphone. So, you know, I know it actually works. Of course, you know, I guess I just don't really know all that much about smartphones. You know, I'm learning. I mean, I'm one of these old people. Heck, I'll be 59 in July. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I mean, I was born 10 years after World War II ended. And it's entirely possible. It's possible I may see the 100th anniversary of World War II. I will almost certainly see the 75th anniversary of it. I mean, I'd be 90 years old if that happened. But, you know, 90 is the new 60, whatever that means. I don't know. 718-305-7176. Our international correspondent, Christian, will be calling in a couple of minutes. We're about 15 and a half minutes now before the top of the hour. Here at ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. This is Radio Free America. My name is Duke Brooks. As I mentioned, the number is 718-305-7176. 7176. We will be talking about the Condoleezza Rice situation. I'm reading her book right now. It's called No Higher Honor, and I just started reading it just a couple of days ago. And I will tell you, it is a very good book. She is a good writer. She's obviously a genius. I mean, there isn't any question about it. As far as Benghazi is concerned, President, no. And when did he know it? I think that those were probably fair questions during Watergate, and they are definitely fair questions now. Take a quick break. More coming up, including your calls, so don't go away.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, and thank you for your service.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
I'm making beef sliders for my friend Sammy. Nana taught me to always pull meat off the grill early, so it's extra juicy.
Use a food thermometer to ensure ground beef is 160 degrees, or you could make people really sick. Sandy didn't think twice about the slider she ate until yoga class, when a nasty case of food poisoning turned her downward-facing dog into upward-moving lunch. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov and learn the steps Maria unwittingly leaves out. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Michael Behrman, inviting you to join me every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on The Michael Behrman Show.
Hit me!
Right here on conservativenationmedia.com.
On conservativenationradio.org.
Yes, indeed, you are listening to Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Duke Brooks here. Those were the Cranberries. From, I think, around 1997, the invasion of the Irish chicks from back then. You know, Sinead O'Connor, the Cranberries, there were quite a few other ones back then. There were, you know, there was a time when you almost could not be on the air unless you were Irish. Sure, no. Top of the morning to you. Speaking of the top of things, in about 11 minutes, we will have Talk Radio News Service News with Justin Duckham. Jeff Holtzman has left Talk Radio News Service. Justin Duckham is in for him. And, well, you know, they are giving us a one-minute feed from Washington, D.C. And I'm very, very glad of that. Now, being the only internet radio network that has an actual Northern European international correspondent, Christian, calling from the Kingdom of Denmark. My friend, welcome aboard. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing just fine, and thank you for having me on tonight. So how's it going over there?
Oh, it's going just fine. I mean, they are going to hold Lois Lerner in contempt of Congress. They are going to, they have formed a House Select Committee to investigate Benghazi. And I think that this is something that, you know, the Democrats set the precedent for this with Watergate and Iran-Contra and Scooter Libby and anything else that any Republican administration does. The Democrat Congress investigates it. And I think that the Democrats need to get used to the idea that when the Republicans hold the Congress, they are going to investigate a Democrat White House, and that's something that they're just going to have to live with. And if they don't like it, that's too bad. How do you like them apples, huh?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And they have gotten off way too easy on a lot of the things, especially Benghazi, you know, where people actually died, you know. Unlike, you know, Watergate, where no one died, where it was really, you know, okay, we can all agree that you shouldn't, you know, like, break into the other party's hotel and search their rooms and do stuff like that. We can all agree on that. But it is actually a minor thing in my book, you know. Politics at that level, you know, it's like the Stanley Cup. It's like the Super Bowl, you know. You do stuff, you know, that you're in it to win it, and you do extra stuff that you don't do at a Little League game, and that's just how it is. So I think that back then, Nixon should just right away have gone out and said, okay, we did it, and we're sorry about it, and let's move on, you know, instead of the cover-up. But then again...
Yeah, most historians, as a matter of fact, as far as I know, every historian will admit that President Nixon, there is no evidence to indicate that President Nixon actually planned or knew about the break-in. That was something that his chief of staff, H.R. Haldeman, John Ehrlichman, the chairman of the committee to reelect the president, the former attorney general, John Mitchell, they did that. And the president himself did not. What the President Nixon's error was that Nixon was a very complicated guy, and I know people that personally knew President Richard Nixon. And they have all said the same thing, and that is that first and foremost, President Nixon was a family man. He was more concerned with his own family, his wife and his two daughters, than he even was about his country. But his as far as the country was concerned, Richard Nixon had a loyalty streak in him, and his loyalty was not subject to any other judgment that he could make. He was so loyal to his country, and he was so loyal to his own people in the White House, it probably never occurred to him to call John Mitchell and say, what are you guys doing over there? And then call H.R. Haldeman and say, come in here, did you know about this? And tell both those guys they're fired. If he had done that probably would have been the end of it. But he didn't. He wanted to try to protect his people. So now, let me ask you this. What are you hearing in Denmark about the fact that the former Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, former National Security Advisor, was invited to speak at the commencement at Rutgers, the State University in New Jersey, and some faculty members and loudmouth left-wing students were able to basically run her off campus. I mean, so much for college campuses being open-minded and tolerant, okay?
Yeah. Sadly, the Danish media has not reported it as far as I can see. And there is a reason for that, of course, because it will show, as you say so correctly, it will show that that even if it is a black woman, then they're after her, and it shows the undemocratic, the no free speech streak. That is a combining force for the Muslims and for the very leftists. groups. An interesting thing that I noticed that not even the commentators on Fox had dared to mention was that when you saw all the protesters, a big part of them were actually Muslim women because you know they have these veils, these half burqas on and I think that's very interesting because it is what us European has already realized that is that when they become enough people that are the Muslims, then they start being very aggressive in their political fights, and they are very much against all that we are for, you know, the basic Christian, conservative family values and stuff. They're very much against it, and they're very undemocratic and very aggressive. So it's just important that if you have a group, a campus where there are only very, very few Muslims, then they're very passive, very you know they keep themselves away from stuff. But as soon as they become enough people there that are like them, then they change strategy real fast and they become very aggressive. And then it's basically their way or the highway. And I actually I'm a great fan of Condi Rice, but I'm disagreeing with her in what she decided to do here. I think it's I wouldn't say cowardly because she doesn't deserve that, but it is kind of cowardly that she wouldn't show up because she is actually kneeling now to a couple of young Muslim women that are telling her which campus she can speak of on and which campus she can't. And I think that's very weak, and it really counts against Condoleezza Rice, I must say, and I'm very sad to say because I've for many years had the dream that she could be a great president, and I must say that I'm rethinking that one now because I think it's weak. You shouldn't
well
in Denmark.
She has said publicly that she doesn't want to be the president of the United States. She does, however, want to be the commissioner of the National Football League.
Yeah, that's weird. But it's fair enough.
I don't know. You know, commissioner of the National Football League, it pays $38 million a year, but president of the United States, I think, only pays $300,000.
But then again, there is such a thing called patriotism. I know that many... in Denmark, I know for a fact that many of the ones that built our welfare state and fought for getting Denmark to be such a great country, they came from relatively rich families, but they declined all the riches and were true to the patriotic ways instead. So I have a different take on that. I don't approve of taking personal wealth over the welfare of the nation, really.
You're right about that, and you know I agree, and I think that you know one of what I consider to be a virtue of Western civilization is patriotism and love of country. If a person does not love their country, I wonder about that guy. You know, I mean, I could imagine a person who was brought up in the old Soviet Union realizing that this place really is not worth loving. I could understand that. But if you live in one of the Western democracies, if you live in any English-speaking country, then you have freedoms, you have opportunities, you have certain capabilities and advantages. You know, why would you not love your country? If you live in any of the Western industrialized democracies, and that includes Denmark, it includes Finland, it includes Norway and Sweden and France, Belgium, Luxembourg,
and
Netherlands, etc.
And another interesting, you know, angle on this is that she was a part of the government that sent a lot of young American out to die for freedom, for the fight of freedom in Iraq and Afghanistan, coming home in wheelchairs, coming home in body bags, for the fight of freedom.
That happens in war. Yeah, that is something that happens in the war.
And I totally supported that. But then I just think it's kind of weak that when it's herself that are on the firing line and are risking something of having a real dramatic day out there on that campus, then she's kind of flaking out and say, oh, they're not better not, because I just think that if you can send young men out to die, then you can, back in the old days, the generals were the first ones to go, you know, they were leading the charge, and I think I think she showed herself to be perhaps not that leader, not have that leader quality. I've seen a lot of clips from the old days with Ronald Reagan, with especially Ronald Reagan, where he went out to campuses back in the 70s, where he really got told off, and they were really aggressive. But then he faced them down, he told them off, and he was very uncomfortable. But that's what real leadership is like. That he wouldn't just flake out and say, okay, then they don't want me there, so I'll just stay at home. I really support Lisa Rice normally, but I think she's dead wrong on this one, and I'm actually disappointed.
All right, well, Christian, we have to take a news break. Can you stand by? Can you hang on for a couple
sure.
of minutes? And let's
sure.
pick this up on the other side of the top of the hour. All right, we are going to go ahead and check Talk Radio News Service from Washington, D.C. with Justin Duckham. More on Condoleezza Rice and other things with Christian and your calls coming up on Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Don't go away.
Coming to you every hour on the hour. The weather's fine, but there may be a meteor shower.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good afternoon. For the Talk Radio News Service, I'm Justin Duckham. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen told lawmakers on the Joint Economic Committee today that the Fed will begin to wind down its stimulus program in the fall, but she could not answer when the Federal Reserve will pursue an increase in rates for the first time since the financial crisis. The Securities Exchange Commission is warning investors to assume caution when designating money via online currency, such as Bitcoin. In an official alert, the SEC noted that Bitcoin users may draw in those proposing fraudulent or high-risk investment opportunities. It also, the agency noted, is harder for Bitcoin investors to seek recourse if deals go sour. And a House Appropriations Subcommittee passed a transportation and housing bill that comes with a $52 billion price tag but cuts $1.8 billion in spending. And a new report from the National Federation of Independent Businesses warns that the health insurance tax included in Obamacare may lead to the private sector shedding up to 286,000 jobs within the decade. Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom. I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. You've seen me around the neighborhood, and you've told me I'm a pretty good kid. Well, I'm one out of every 4 children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. This problem is closer than you think. My teacher tells me we could grow up and be whatever we want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. There's enough food in this country to feed everyone. please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. We are about 5.5 minutes after the top of the hour into hour number two of this edition of Radio Free America, and we are speaking with our international correspondent, Christian Kjellruff. Is that the right way to pronounce your name, Christian, your last name, Kjellruff?
I think you got it pretty close. It's Christian Kjellruff, but it is with, you know, the special Danish letters and stuff. So I think you got it pretty close.
Right. Okay. If you were not brought up speaking, the Danish is considered a Germanic language, right? The Scandinavian languages are called Germanic.
No, it's it's a long story, but it's not like German at all. You know?
Okay.
We have our own language.
When I see your posts on Facebook, sometimes I can kind of figure out what you're saying in Danish, because there is some similarity to English as there is in Dutch. But a lot of people that were not born to speak English have said that English is a very, very hard language to learn if it's a second language. But, you know, I am wondering why when somebody like Condoleezza Rice or Alan West or Herman Cain or Dr. Ben Carson, when they are attacked in the press for their positions, I am just wondering why people don't respond by saying you're a racist for attacking them, because I think that that would be a valid response. You know, I really do. It's kind of like the Democrats are now saying, oh, Benghazi, Schmengazi, move on, big deal, break it up, folks, move it along, nothing to see here. And that isn't anything that the Republicans were able – that's not a message that the GOP was able to get across during Watergate or Iran-Contra. The Democrats, when Bill Clinton was impeached, he was impeached but not convicted, so he remained in office. The Democrats raised that argument. The media gave them a lot of credibility, but at the end of the day – the Congress does what it wants to. But, you know, I do agree with you. I think that Secretary Rice most certainly, you know, should have contacted Rutgers and maybe even put out a statement saying that the Rutgers students and faculty that led the protest against her were racists, sexists, and they were intolerant and exclusionary. And maybe that would have shut them up.
I just think that she should have showed up. You know, I don't think you should have made any statements or anything. She just said, I was invited and I accept the invitation, so I'm showing up and I'm willing to speak with any groups afterwards or before, any groups on campus and have a dialogue. If they do so in a nice manner, you know, make it more, you know, make it less dramatic, and don't give the by actually what she has done by bending by letting them win. Actually, she has given them encouragement on all other campuses all over America so that they can prevent, like Michelle Bachmann, like Sarah Palin, like Rick Santorum, and so on, in coming and speaking. And before you know it, the campuses all around America would be conservative-free areas, actually, because they know now that even with a top dog like Condoleezza Rice, that they can win. And that's,
well, that's
actually
exactly what
they
want.
Because the end result of
what they want.
They want this one. We just gotta, you know, accept the truth, and that is that that she caved in, and they won. And I think it's sad, you know. I don't know what else to say, but she really just caved in.
Well, that may be, but generally speaking, conservatives are people with better manners than liberals. Liberals will get in your face and they'll scream and yell. And conservatives, generally speaking, will just kind of politely say, all right, fine, if that's what you want to do, I don't even want to talk to you. And they will turn and they will leave. And, you know, I do think that
we have no problem in hearing what they have to say.
Fighting back, you know. What is going on, right? I mean, the latest thing that we've heard about Ukraine is that Putin said that he was going to pull his troops back from the eastern Ukrainian border, but the Pentagon is now saying we have not seen any actual evidence of that. What are you hearing in Denmark?
Actually, it's interesting that you're mentioning it, because it hit me in that very moment that we're really not speaking that much about the Ukraine these days. Today, these days in Danish media, it's very much, you know, like local issues, like Danish issues, everyday issues. I think that the media cycle works like this, that you can only keep the focus on a topic for a certain amount of time. And I think that Ukraine has had its time, and the media knows that basically the viewers are getting bored with it, because, you know, it is far away and it doesn't really has anything to do with the everyday lives of Americans or in my case, you know, Danish people. You know, our life goes on, whether there is a Ukraine or there isn't. It's a sad fact, but it's still a fact, you know.
They won't be bored with it if full-scale combat breaks out over there, I can tell you that.
Then you have the new development, they're interested. The interest will be refreshed. Now, what do you have to say about all the business with Monica Lewinsky showing up again? I've been waiting to hear from her in a bit, you know, with all this talk about Hillary.
You know, I don't know what role Monica Lewinsky could possibly play in the 2016 presidential election. There are going to be a lot of people that are going to be on Hillary Clinton's side no matter what. There are going to be, even if it turns out that somebody comes forward and says, yeah, I was at the Pentagon and I called the State Department and I got Hillary on the phone and I said, there's a huge number of Mohammedan terrorists with grenade launchers, mortars, RPGs, machine guns outside our consulate in Benghazi. And her response to me was, I couldn't care less about those guys in that consulate. I hope that they all get killed. Don't bother me again, and hung up on me. I mean, even if that comes out, there are going to be people that are going to say, yeah, well, you know, it was a long time ago. Don't worry about it. It doesn't mean anything. Don't worry about it. All the while, they're saying, even though Richard Nixon's dead, we should hang him because of Watergate. You know, that's the deal.
And that is very true. I just think that you can hit that you really should hit him hard on it, because, you know, it is actually disgusting thinking about such a, you know, like a man at the age of 50, you know, in a big office, you know, in a big position, taking advantage of such a young girl, you know, and doing it in the Oval Office. I think it's so disgusting.
No, it's not taking advantage. It's not taking advantage of, because her own statements, which came out at the time, were that she went to Washington, her dad arranged for her to get that White House internship, and she specifically told her friends that she was going to be a White House intern so that she could get her presidential knee pads. Those were her words. So she was not taken advantage of. She went there specifically to try to seduce the president, and I would fault him for allowing that to happen. But by the same token, JFK had significantly more, and in my view, significantly better quality dalliances than
I just think there is an angle to this that are not being presented, because what kind of wife would stay married to a guy that humiliates her and her family in front of the whole world? I mean, even here in Denmark, and this was before the internet, even here in Denmark, we were all over this Monica Lewinsky. We were all talking about this Monica Lewinsky back in those days, back these 20 years ago. We were all talking about it, and she stayed married to it. I've been thinking, you know, how would I have reacted if it had been my dad, you know, humiliating my mom like this in front of the whole world? And I think that's really the angle that the GOP should play. They should ask the people, what kind of woman, how is she built, that she doesn't really give a damn that her husband, she humiliates her in front of the... Has she no pride? Or is this marriage just a fake marriage, a marriage of convenience in order to enhance both of them's political career? Is this a fake marriage? That's the kind of question that I would ask. And I would say, what kind of role model is he to his children? And how is she, as a mom, protecting Chelsea of being affected by those extremely bad decisions and lack of morals that her dad has? All these questions should be asked. And I think that kind of the GOP is being too soft on that. And I don't think you can afford to be that, because the left are certainly not soft on you.
I agree with that 100%. Christian, I've got to run, but I look forward to speaking to you again next week and between now and then on Facebook.
Yeah, great. And thanks for letting me on. And let me just say this, God bless America.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great evening, sir, and may God save Denmark. All righty. Listen, we have been telling you for quite a while that conservativenationmedia.com is making some big changes, and you will notice that one of them started yesterday. Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance has moved to Tuesday. Tennessee's issues are spreading out all over America, and Dave Vance brings his veterans' insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Tuesday. So make sure to check him out. It's brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Inside Tennessee has moved to Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. We're going to take a quick break here, touch briefly on some Civil War history, and then my good friend Ed Troy, the liberal Coloradan, will be joining us, so don't go away.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
Unexpected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by feedthepig.org.
Well, I finally did it. I opened a 401k.
So you're giving up, just like that?
Giving up on what?
I'm getting an inheritance from a distant relative.
Don't you think if there were a billionaire in the family, we'd know about it by now?
Listen to me. We are one phone call away from riding horses on our own private polo ground. One call from christening yachts, having a butler, using summer as a verb.
How do you figure?
Look, everyone's got a rich uncle somewhere. It's statistics. So the best thing you can do is just prepare for the inevitable.
Right. Which is why I thought maybe it would be smart to take control of my finances. You know, start using a budget, get out of debt, set some retirement goals.
Budgets? Debt? You watch your mouth. Retirement shouldn't be a goal for us. It should be a way of life.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
As I went through school, one giant question loomed over me. What did I want to be?
But in order to know what I wanted to be, I had to first decide what I wanted to make. I wanted to make more. So I became a teacher. Now I make learning a privilege, not a chore. And frustration, a tool, not an obstacle. I make working hard seem easy, and giving up, impossible. I make an old subject feel like a fresh thought, and unconventional methods common. I make material things less important, and little things like patience and kindness count. I make weekdays more exciting than weekends, and classrooms feel like anything but. I make things different, which is all I ever hoped for. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Find out how you can make more at teach.org. Make more. Teach. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
That music, of course, means it's time to talk a little bit, and this week we're going to be speaking a very little bit about this day in Civil War history. 150 years ago, May 7th, 1864, because there was so much going on, and because I've got my friend Ed Troy on hold in Colorado, who's going to be joining us in a moment, let me just say that on this day in 1864, William Tecumseh Sherman began his march to Atlanta. And if you have even glanced at Civil War history, you will know that the so-called Uncle Billy Sherman wreaked real havoc in Georgia. And the American song, "While We Were Marching Through Georgia," comes directly from that. A few days earlier, on May 4th, 1864, the Battle of the Wilderness began. I mean, 1864 has been called the year of big battles, and there were really quite a few of them. Now, the big battle tonight on Radio Free America and ConservativeNationMedia.com. Ed, welcome aboard. Let's you and I do battle. How you doing, Guy?
I'm doing pretty well. How's my conservative friend doing?
Oh, we're having a wonderful time here. I am keeping my fingers crossed that the summer is going to be characterized by committee hearings on Benghazi and the IRS, just like the summer of 1973 was dominated by Watergate committee hearings. I only hope that the media will give as much play to these hearings, which are obviously of tremendous national significance, even more in my view than Watergate was. But on the other hand, I really don't see that happening. How about you?
Well, I think it depends on what part of the media you're going to be discussing. I think a lot of these things will be, they will be aired out because I, obviously, as you know, the Republican controlled House is going to make every effort to bring this up. And I think the Democratic-controlled Senate, to some degree, will be able to stop anything from happening. The most that might happen would be some condemnation from the House, and then just a media reaction to that. And I'm not even sure whether the media really cares that much about the outcome of it. Just for them, it's advertising, and it's unfortunate, but I mean, a lot of these things do have, are very, very important. My personal feeling is that the Benghazi situation is not as important as things like Iran-Contra, which was a clear constitutional issue, or Watergate, which is, again, another constitutional issue, or even...
What were the constitutional issues? What were the constitutional issues surrounding Watergate? What part of the Constitution did Nixon, unquote, violate? I've always wondered when people say that. I don't get it. What exactly, article and section of the Constitution did he violate?
Well, I'm not exactly familiar with the exact article or amendment, but There is verbiage in the Constitution indicating that the president cannot be allowed to stay in power when they're involved in various types of criminal activities, and certainly the Watergate break-in, with his knowledge, would be considered a felony, and as such, that would be similar to a lawyer being disbarred for engaging in a felony, because he's at the very top of the pyramid, so he's a much higher level of responsibility to the nation, and specifically and especially to the Constitution, which is supposed to be the guiding light and torch for all of us.
Well, kind of like when President Clinton lied under oath.
Well, when Clinton lied under oath, that definitely became a very, very big constitutional issue. There's no question about it. Not cool. However, and that didn't stain his reputation, in a sense, forever, just being involved in that. The problem that we have in our country is that we are pursuing these public figures who are also double as elected officials and prying into every single bit of their privacy to unearth things that personally I believe should remain private. To me, it's irrelevant whether Clinton was doing something naughty with Monica Lewinsky, and I want to leave that poor woman alone. She shouldn't be hammered anymore. I mean, she was a young kid or young woman at the time, and I expect her to be able to, since defend herself, is wrong. She to me is a very sympathetic character, quite honestly. But Clinton definitely. I mean, yeah,
not really
obviously.
Sure. I mean, it's not like, I mean, Bill Clinton, at the very least, forced himself, and at the very worst, raped several women before he met Monica Lewinsky. But Lewinsky went to Washington specifically because she wanted to try to seduce the president. And, even Barbara Walters, I mean, she flashed her thong underwear at the president of the United States. And Barbara Walters even said to her, "Who does such a thing?" And she didn't have an answer for it. I think the judgment involved there was utterly it was just horrible on both of their parts.
Oh,
but
no question.
Here's the way I look at Benghazi. The president takes an oath basically to uphold, support, and defend the Constitution and the United States. And when American personnel in a consulate office, which is really just a half a notch shy of being sovereign U.S. territory, an embassy is sovereign U.S. territory. But
absolutely.
If the president is aware that Americans in that building are under attack, and he doesn't do anything about it, and then later tries to blame it on something that was just made up out of whole cloth, that is a very serious problem, and it calls his credibility into question, and it calls his fitness as commander-in-chief into question. And obviously he must have, someone in the White House at Foggy Bottom somewhere, must have known that this was a very, very bad thing, or they would not have trotted out Susan Rice to tell everybody that it was an internet video that caused this, because clearly that we now know that was not the cause. So I think that this is a lot worse
than Watergate. But, I want to interrupt you. I'm sorry to do this, but on two things there.
It's all right.
First of all, I mean, as regards to Clinton, I think that depicting what he did as rape, or anyone who says that, I think is way over the top. And what I do think
Catherine Willey and the other girls were saying that happened?
Hey, Clinton came
Paul
over
and
said
Catherine Willey? Yeah, both of them, yeah.
I didn't know that Paula Jones considered that a rape, but I thought that was a situation where Clinton met up with her, and it was, again, in one of these mutually agreeable situations between the two parties. And, you know, maybe she had sour grapes afterwards or whatever, and she certainly, I doubt if she was treated very well. But I can't go as far, and I, you know what, in his workplace, or maybe it was, I don't even know if he was a governor even at the time, but it was still, it's still him indulging in behavior that is at least loathsome and certainly very, very questionable, socially unacceptable. Now, as regards to the situation with the internet videotape, that was not the cause, but I sincerely believe that was the cover. And I think that the insurgents knew that there would be people rioting, over this internet video, which was, basically a mockery of the Islamic, incarnation of God, Allah, or Muhammad. And so they knew that was going to happen, and so I believe they used that as cover to engage in that attack, that very specific attack. And because there were many other riots throughout the Islamic world regarding that internet tape, but only this place had an absolute armed attack that was regrettably very successful on their part in penetrating our very thin defenses. That definitely did happen, but I do sincerely believe that the videotape was a cover, and they said, hey, look, this is going to happen. We can get some people in here, get our RPGs and whatever else they were using, and go and attack the American embassy. That's what I believe their thinking process was. As a chess player, those are the kinds of things that you look for, little traps, little covers, and sneaky ways of tricking the opposition into making a mistake or letting their guard down. Honestly, that is what I believe occurred there. Should it have been allowed to happen, or should it have happened? Absolutely not. But you go back to 9/11, and there's ample evidence that our government knew about Al-Qaeda way beforehand during the Clinton administration, and not enough of that is being brought to air either. It's all of a sudden like there's this sudden surprise on 9/11, and that nobody knew in the government who Al-Qaeda was. And you've been in the D.C. area. Obviously, the Washington Post reported on our embassies being blown up, and the USS Cole, and the Millennium Bomb Plot, and the Khobar Towers, and the original World Trade Center bombing.
World Trade Center in 93, yep.
Yes, it
absolutely.
So it beggars
now, Ed,
comprehension
Ed,
to say that
Ed,
we
I've
did
gotta,
not
I've
know about
a break. Okay, Ed, I've got to take a break. Can you bear with me
for
2-3 minutes? And then I would like to speak with you about Condoleezza Rice and Donald Sterling. So just hang on there for a second if you can. You know, other than being an ambassador and being killed in your own building, one of the worst nightmares that can happen to an American today is to be the victim of identity theft. If it does happen to you, and I hope it never does, it could take months or even longer to recover from it if you can recover at all. So don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock, as you are aware, is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. So to protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. The network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. I can guarantee you, you will be very glad that you did. You will also be very glad that you hang out through this commercial break when Ed and I get back, so stay right where you are.
Hey, Billy.
Yeah?
Do you want to go to the state fair?
Yeah.
Do you want to ride the roller coaster?
Yeah.
The big one?
Yeah.
The one with the reverse flip?
Yeah!
Well, you can't.
You see, Billy, when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have done with it, including going to the state fair.
Oh, man.
Cheer up. This year, your parents will make it right. They're going to visit EnergySavers.gov, where they'll get tips on how to save energy and money. Then they'll add extra insulation and get a few of those Energy Star appliances. They could save hundreds of dollars a year. And you know what, Billy?
What?
They'll take you to the state fair next year.
But I want to go this year.
I know you do, Billy. I know you do. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You gotta try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
So, Jacqueline.
Yes, Mom?
I wanted to talk to you about something and... Oh, wait. Hold on. I just got a text. Oh, there's another one. Wow. Busy, busy me. So, anyway...
Oh, wait, Mom. I just got a message. My friends keep commenting on my comment. Oh, there's another one. So many comments on my comment.
Oh, I can't wait to watch TV tonight. Playoffs!
Hey, guys, check out my new video game. Pew,
pew. Wait. Mom, what?
Huh? What?
Hold
What'd
on. What'd you say? Wait a second, what?
This weekend, unplug. Take your family to the forest. There's nothing in the world like experiencing nature firsthand. Trees, paths, bluebirds, streams. Getting closer to nature can get you closer to your family. To find the forest nearest you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Wade, and you're listening to Conservative Nation Radio. Real conservatism for real conservatives.
Oh, welcome back to Radio Free America and ConservativeNationMedia.com. Duke Brooks here. The number is 718-305-7176. My lifelong friend, Ed Troy, the liberal warrior, liberal gladiator, liberal avenger. What is your moniker these days, buddy?
It is the liberal gladiator. So believe me, I do annoy many of my liberal friends because I have a little different take on how our country should be run and protected and so forth. So, this is where you and I probably have a lot more agreement than what a lot of your conservative friends would even imagine. So, we can go forward.
Now, speaking of the religion of peace, this is from Reuters out of Dubai. A court in Saudi Arabia has sentenced the editor of an internet forum he founded to discuss the role of religion in the Islamic kingdom to 10 years in jail and 1,000 lashes, Saudi media reported Wednesday. Raif Badawi, who started the Free Saudi Liberals website, was originally sentenced to 7 years in prison and 600 lashes. In July last year, but an appeals court overturned the sentence and ordered a retrial. Apart from imposing a stiffer sentence on Badawi, in his retrial, the judge at the criminal court in the Red Sea city of Jeddah also fined him 1 million rials, which is $266,000. Badawi's website has been closed since his first trial. The prosecution had demanded that Badawi be tried for apostasy, a charge which carries the death penalty in Saudi Arabia. The judge in last year's trial had dismissed the apostasy charge. The point here, I think, is that if you live in a Mohammedan country and you disagree with what the Mohammedan religious leadership thinks about the role of religion in those theocratic countries, you can be put to death or you can be put in prison for a decade and essentially tortured to death. And that isn't anything that happens in this country, but if the Mohammedan zealots in this country have their way, then this country will be under Sharia law, you know, just like the other Muslim countries are. And I guess my question is, even though we do have freedom of religion here, can we offer freedom to a religion that views its own mandate and duty and obligation as being the destruction of all other religions? You know, that's my rhetorical question. What is your outlook on that?
Well, I mean, you bring up the fact that the guy who is doing this is a liberal, and that means that the Saudi government, which is Wahhabist in nature and a theocracy, is extremely conservative in their, you know, in their take on how society is to be run. That's why women don't drive cars or go anywhere, and they walk four steps behind the men and can't be in public unless they have a male relative escorting them around, which is tremendously inefficient as far as economics is concerned. If they didn't have oil, they'd be dirt poor because they don't make anything.
That's right.
But the worst thing about this is that this exposes a fundamental problem that our country has in dealing with some segments of the Islamic religion. And those segments are, you know, I mean, fine, call them jihadists, you can call them, you know, whatever the heck. I mean, just, you know, terrorists, I don't care what you call them, it's just a semantic situation. But their thing is that they are dedicated to the idea of eliminating, destroying America, and replacing it, as you said correctly, with an Islamic Sharia type of run situation. My personal feeling is, and this is where, you know, some of your conservative friends would probably be a little freaked out, but my personal feeling is that our country should let the, you know, Saudis know and the kidnappers of the Nigerian girls know that,
right,
that we have, you know, a thermonuclear force, and we can set those missiles, you know, to vaporize some of these hotbeds and just make them extinct. And that's exactly how Genghis Khan dealt with them. When the Islamic jihadists were say, hey, we're going to take out Genghis Khan and kill him, we're going to do a jihad and you know, and wipe out the Golden Horde, Genghis Khan said, well, fine, you go right ahead and come to me, and we'll just kill them all. And when he got done with the Islamic world at that time, there was a very remarkably, some very reasonable Muslims, and they started giving us things like algebra and you know, astronomy, and setting up universities of learning instead of running around just slaughtering people, and, you know, by the sword. And that's because Genghis Khan knew that if he went after them and they just killed every single one of them, everyone without exception, somebody reasonable is going to say, hey, wait a minute, I really don't want to die, and I'd like to maybe talk to you about this, perhaps. Is there something we can do to show that we can coexist without you killing us all? Yes, lay down your arms and stop trying to kill us, and we can talk. But, you know, honestly, that's where I think that our country, unfortunately, needs to be dealing with these individuals. That's why I was very much in support of the hot pursuit of Osama bin Laden, and to make sure that our reputation was not damaged and that we're going to come after these miscreants wherever they are on the earth. They attack our assets or our, you know, especially our people, you know, or if another country says, hey, look, these guys are coming after us because of our religion, because of where we're born or who our mom and dad were or something like that. I mean, we almost have to view this not quite as an existential threat, but as a threat to our quality of life. And unfortunately, if their stand is that we have to die, then, you know, it makes the decision a lot easier. You just say, okay, fine, if it's you or me, then you are going to go and get your 24 virgins, your 72 virgins, or whatever you get.
but you're going to check out the hereafter. Goodbye, good luck, and see you later, wherever that is. And that is exactly,
I agree.
And honestly, yeah, if we do that, I mean, again, you know, Genghis Khan wasn't the nicest guy, but you can't deal with people who are sitting there who are saying, you know, our mission is to kill you. I mean, how do you deal with them nicely? Hi, I'm going to send you a mean email.
Well, there's,
you sure are, you know,
there's
you can't
no
do that.
Possibility. There's no possibility of peaceful coexistence with somebody like that. And that's why whenever I see this silly bumper sticker that says coexist and it's made out of various religious symbols, the cross, the Star of David, the yin and yang, you know, the Mohammedan moon crescent, you know, that sort of thing. Those people, I think, would come into the category of useful idiots, okay, because the Mohammedans believe in peace, but it must be peace on their terms, and they don't back down. You know, somebody could put out an internet video that is critical of Mohammed, and we can count on there being dozens, if not hundreds, of deaths in riots all over the Mohammedan world. But if somebody like Martin Scorsese puts out a film like The Last Temptation of Gore, that was Bertolucci. I mean, if somebody puts out a movie that is critical of Christ or critical of the Catholic Church or critical of Christianity in general, what do the Christians do? They don't even organize to boycott it. You know,
because they recognize it.
That's right.
You know, it's like, oh, well, huh,
well,
get over it.
But yeah. A lot of it is not
humor. Who cares?
You know, a lot of it is not humor. I mean, the fact of the matter
but
is...
But some of it is harsh. I mean, no, I agree.
Yes,
some of it is pretty nasty. Some of it's really, I mean, it's downright despicable. But, you know, in general, when I see stuff like that, even if it's despicable or disgusting, I end up laughing at it. Because, I mean, you know, who cares about these marginalized losers, you know, doing this kind of stuff? I mean, I don't care. I mean... They have no relevance to me. But, you know, on the other hand, if someone decides they want to kill me because, you know, somebody in the country or somewhere in the world or somewhere out of the West sets up something that's humoring Muhammad, now they want to kill me merely because I was born in the United States, well, you know what? I don't have any sympathy for them. There's 7.5 billion people on the planet, and if they die, I don't really care. I mean, in fact, that is a desirable outcome. And they make it so because they want to go out of their way to kill you, kill me, and so forth. And, I mean, this poor guy in Saudi Arabia, I mean, give me a break. I mean, this is nonsense. I mean, you need to be able to say something so that other people can have a conversation and come up with some kind of improvement on what you have there. I mean, this Stone Age mentality really is beneath any, quote, civilized religion or nation or culture. Or people.
I agree.
Or ethnicity.
I agree. Yeah, there's no question about it. Now, Ed, I must run along, but I did want to ask you, how is Mrs. Troy doing?
Well, she's okay. We've had to take her, you know, and get an MRI and so forth. But you know, there's still a couple things we've got to look for because I'm not sure that they have everything right. You know, we are still very concerned, but, you know, at least she's aware of things, I'm aware of things, and, you know, we are understanding why things are the way they are without understanding the causation of the problem, if that makes sense. So
yeah.
You know, we're accepting where we are, but we want to go forward, but we do want resolution and some understanding about the causation for the effects that my wife is having. She is just, I mean, I love her to death. What can I say?
Of course.
And how are things with you and your family?
Things are fine here, but with a question, you are in my thoughts and in my prayers, and, you know, by all means, please pass along to her, even though she and I have never met. My most sincere wishes for a complete and speedy recovery. And that is what I hope for her, and that is what I hope for you.
My pleasure, pal.
You know,
all right, buddy, I've got to run.
Well, I would say super quick. I just want everyone, your listeners, to understand that you know, we come from opposite sides of the political spectrum, and to some degree. But you know, we can be civil. We can listen to each other. And we can care about each other as Americans and as friends. And we do that, and I think we can really cross some very serious bridges together. Because you know, I'd rather be, you know, for obvious reasons, locked arm in arm with you and your friends and your conservative friends, than dealing with you know, with Saudis who are resenting my, you know, existence, but nevertheless taking my petrodollars. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Absolutely, Eddie. Bless you, my friend, and we'll speak again very soon, pal.
Fantastic. All right, Duke. You have a wonderful evening. And thank you so much for, you know, for our interactions here. Just, I appreciate our friendship greatly.
Likewise. Thanks, pal. Have a great night. See you soon. All righty. You know, we are still the freest country on earth, and that, of course, means America. And we are. And those of us who do love the country know that the Constitution is the basis of our liberties. And we at conservativenationmedia.com, we're not about to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedoms away. And our very own constitutional expert, Matthew Opalisky, is leading that charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution Community with Matthew Opalisky, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. A few closing thoughts coming up right after this, so don't go away.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, tail-wagging, backyard-hanging, and, of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a lavish terrier-hound-chihuahua-looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle. Simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top of that thing.
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Dave Vance, your host for Inside Tennessee on conservativenationmedia.com. Inside Tennessee is moving to Tuesday nights beginning on May 6th. Tune in and join the conversation with some of Tennessee's most conservative and constitutionally minded activists, experts, politicians, and average citizens that are fed up and making a stand. That's Inside Tennessee, Tuesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Now you know how nice it seems.
All right, welcome back.
back to Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Those, of course, the Mighty Moody Blues from Birmingham, England. And have you heard? You know, I used to know, I had the whole Moody Blues catalog. That album is not on the threshold of a dream, but it is, I can't believe. This is one of the things that I hate about getting old. One of the other ones is that I have a constant pain in my right leg. I can barely walk. Have no idea what that's all about. I think I know, but I'm not sure. But anyway, it's just awful. Look, you don't want to get old. Anyway, let us take a look at the American League East. Right now, the Baltimore Orioles are at the top of the heap. And at the moment, they are in the top of the ninth inning at Tampa Bay. Nobody out, nobody on. Right now, one ball, two strikes. Adam Jones is pitching. I'm sorry, Adam Jones is hitting. Josh Luke is a right-handed pitcher for Tampa Bay. And the score now, 4-2, top of the ninth inning. And as I mentioned, nobody out, nobody on. You know, it's funny, being a Major League Baseball radio announcer or play-by-play person, that is a lot harder than it sounds. You know, if you're somebody that really, really loves baseball, you might think, boy, I can do this. It is very hard. And I'm not exactly a major sports expert. I'm not really even a sports fan. But I do definitely love the Baltimore Orioles. And when it comes to the NFL, I really do love the Baltimore Ravens. I love the Colts before that. Are you getting the impression that I have a particular affinity for the city of Baltimore, Maryland? I wanted to ask, excuse me a moment. I wanted to speak with Ed Troy about the Donald Sterling event involving the Los Angeles Clippers of the National Basketball Association last week. You know, I'm not really sure where my own thoughts on this are. The National Basketball Association is a private organization. The fact of the matter is, the First Amendment does not apply in this situation. Whether the girl that made the surreptitious recording of him was in violation of California state law involving surreptitious recordings, that I really don't know what the answer to that is. I'm not really sure. If it is illegal, I don't know why she hasn't been prosecuted. The other thing is, if somebody says something, I don't know if that makes them a racist, and if it does, I am very sure that being a racist is not really a crime. It might be something that other people would think, come on, what's the matter with you? Why don't you just take people as individuals? And that's the way I try to do things. I think Ed Troy might be back with us. Is that you, Ed?
Yes, it is.
All right. We really have less than 1 minute, but, what thoughts you have, share them. Let's hear it.
Well, the Donald Sterling thing is truly, it's an embarrassment. Obviously, he had his privacy violated, but once it was violated because he's a public figure, you now start bringing things out into the open. And when stuff comes like that, what he said comes out into the open, you just have to call it for what it is. And you know, it's wrong, doesn't belong in a business place at all. If you want to have those feelings in private, you're entitled to them. But not in the workplace.
Well, I agree. We only have a couple of seconds, but Ed, I'm going to force you to give me the last word on this. He pays...
Of course.
The quote, black people on his payroll, millions of dollars a year. He has given six figures to the NAACP. And, you know, I think you can call somebody a racist based on their actions, and his actions are anything but racist. Anyway, Ed, I've got to go. Let us speak again very soon, hopefully next week. And, gee, I hate to do that, but, you know, we only have a certain amount of time available here. But I hope you have a great week, a great weekend, and I'll speak to you next Wednesday.